at the night's meeting has been convened at a joint AA and Al-Anon meeting, the purpose of allowing Lois and Evelyn to attend the one meeting. I'd like to call on Doug of AA to say a few words.
Mr. Chairman, members of Al-Anon, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, my job this evening is a comparatively easy one. Seth has got all the work to do. But I would like to say how very, very pleased we are to have the opportunity of having with us this evening Lois W., the wife of our late co-founder Bill W., and also Evelyn C. Now, I'm not sure where I've got this right or not, but Evelyn C. from the Central Services Council in America. If I'm wrong, Evelyn can have a go at me after. But I think we are very, very fortunate inasmuch that when we look back, we think of all the spade work that Bill W. and Dr. Bob put into AA. I don't think at the particular time when they started it off that they realised to the magnitude that it would grow today. And for one, I am very grateful, and I feel quite sure that all the members of Alcoholics Anonymous are too. I would like to extend to Lois and also to Evelyn our sincere wishes on behalf of the council, the Executive Council of WA Services, Council of WA, also the members of the respective metropolitan groups, our country groups, and also our loners who are unable to be here this evening. I know that they go along with me and they wish you a very, very happy evening, Lois and Evelyn, because we've had an opportunity to meet you, we've heard so much about you, and we know this had been one wish that you always desired to get to Australia, and for that we are very, very grateful. In closing, I would like to say that if there's any spare people around after, would they, I don't know whether it's been said or not before, but would they please put the chairs back? So without any further ado, I'll pass it back to our chairman, but before I do so, I'd like to put your hands together for a very warm welcome to Lois and Evelyn. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Over to you. Thanks a lot, Seth.
Tonight, we're very lucky because besides having the founder of Al-Anon in our midst, we also have the lady who brought Al-Anon to Western Australia and to Australia. I'd like to call on Ella to tell us how she did it.
Thanks very much, Seth. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Ella, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. It's a great pleasure to have you here, Lois. It was in 1963 that I wrote to you and extended an invitation to come to Western Australia for our, in the occasion of the third convention in Australia, but it was the first time in Western Australia. And although you declined then, you did say, we hope to make Western Australia, and I'm glad to see you here tonight. Although, of course, it wasn't to be as far as Bill was concerned, and it is a wonderful thing for me, but I also lost my husband, and he'd have loved to have been here tonight. Seth has asked me to say how Al-Anon was brought to Western Australia. Well, it was way back in 1953 when my husband was secretary of the Fremantle AA group. He was very friendly with another member of AA, and this chap used to come down so much. And he gave me some forums, family forums, they were printed in South San Francisco. That was by Ruth G. Well, I was very interested, and I wrote to Ruth G, but unfortunately I got no reply. So, therefore, I couldn't do a thing. So my husband said, well, as we're going to Sydney in 1953, late 53, he said, we'll see what's going in Sydney, and you can bring it back here. But when we went to Sydney, of course, there was no Al-Anon in Sydney. So, of course, I came back here, and I was none the wiser. But I was fortunate enough to go to an open Al-Anon meeting, and there I met Bertha and Gertie. They both had brothers in AA. And they said, well, we're very interested, and if you get this going, we'll stand behind you, which they did. And so we started our first meeting on April the 20th, 1954. So we're almost 18 years old here in Australia. And in those days, of course, we never called ourselves Al-Anon because we didn't know anything about Al-Anon. We were non-AA family group. And so we continued for a while like that. Now, later on in 1955, a lass wrote from South Australia and she wanted to know about the meeting. So, of course, I wrote back and they started a group there in February 1956, the Esperance group started, and it's still going. And also at that time, about that time, we had another letter from Sydney. And this also inquired about our meeting. And in April 1956, the Kingsgrove meeting started in New South Wales, and that also is still going. It was only eventually, when we caught up with New York, that we changed the name, of course, to Al-Anon, and so conformed with the rest of the world. In 1968, we started our Central Service Group Council in Western Australia. And since then, of course, our groups have increased. We are a very large state, the largest state, but unfortunately, our people are so scattered that we have 7 metropolitan groups now and a country group. There's our country group behind. And we have loners in various parts of our state. I hope that from the publicity that we receive tonight, that many, many more are going to come to us for help. We can help the family. We can't help the alcoholic, but we can help the family. And I hope to see many more coming along. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. And for our next speaker tonight, I was told that if I put her on early, she'd endeavour to speak English for us.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Nita, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. When I first started to court my husband seriously, my friends told me that he drank too much. They pointed this out to me. But I had never seen my husband drink. I'd never even seen him stagger. Although when we did go to the cinema, he was up and down and in and out quite a lot, but I didn't put anything to this. I thought, oh, well, you know, when he marries me, it will be different. Well, he did marry me, and his mother was a hotel owner, and he worked as manager for his mother. But prior to being married, a firm offered him the job as manager in a smaller business, a pub, about 7 miles from home. And we started off there, much to my husband's delight. What beautiful wedding present, wasn't it, to an alcoholic? Anyway, we started off, and 18 months later, and one son later, we were flat broke. But my mother-in-law was a very generous person, and she set us up in a home, and of course there was no responsibilities, no worries for my husband there. Of course, he went back into the shop with Grandma, and the drinking problem really progressed then. He, you know, it really did become a problem, but I just couldn't understand this at all. Anyway, we came to Australia, and from Australia, it just rolled there. It really got going here. And myself, my whole personality changed. From a happy-go-lucky person, I became a very self-centered, self-pitying person. Everything that happened in the home was my husband's fault, according to me. He drank because he didn't love me, spent all the money because he didn't love me. I had to go out and work because he didn't love me. He thought more of his grog than he did of us. Everything was blamed on my husband because in my ignorance, I thought that he was drinking because he liked drinking. Well, let's face it, he did like drinking at first when he could master it, but when he finally became the slave to the drink and the drink the master, well, it was a different story altogether. Like most alcoholic wives, I tried everything to stop my alcoholic from drinking. I poured the whiskey down the sink. I hid it. I hid my purse, and the only one I couldn't find it was myself. I threatened to leave him. I left him on many occasions, but more always came back. I nagged, oh brother, could I nag? I became a real beautiful nagger. I could hate them all as far as nagging was concerned. But the minute my husband went out, you know how his stomach starts tightening up and he gets no itches, and the longer he's away, the madder you get. No, you're just going to give it to him when he comes in. And of course, my poor husband, unfortunately, when he has a drink, too many, that wee finger bends. Some men throw their hats in the door, but the minute my husband opened the door and my hand came round, I threw that finger like that. That was a sign for me to let loose. And if I didn't let loose, he got the cold treatment, silent. Ah, oh, I must be cruel in these days. Through ignorance only, through ignorance, because I didn't understand that what my husband had was a real problem. It was a disease. Eventually, things became so bad that I just stopped liking my husband. I didn't even like my husband. I liked my husband, but the alcoholic I hated. When my husband was sober, it was all that I could wish for in a husband. But when he was drunk, he was a real alcoholic, Jekyll and Hyde. Anyway, we decided to part, and part we did. But come Christmas, we come back again, but my husband still couldn't master the drink. He was under the thumb of the old bottle, well and truly under it. But he did try, I'll say that much. Anyway, we came to the city because by this time my husband had a heart condition. We came to the city where he could get treatment. And we went on the invalid pension. Do you know, these were the happiest days that we had. When he was an invalid pensioner, and we had to stand outside the door every 2 weeks and wait for his check coming along. We used to kill ourselves laughing at that. Anyway, things got all right. He got better, but he didn't. I beg your pardon, I didn't. I got worse. My thinking went entirely wrong. I could only think of myself. I had no confidence. I couldn't stand in a man's company. I used to run away. I became shockingly nervous and very full of thought. I was the only one that ever suffered. But anyway, one day I was walking along the terrace and somehow or other I landed in an Al-Anon office. I couldn't understand what they were talking about then. you have to forgive me. I sometimes forget. I couldn't understand what they were discussing there. All I could think of was all this resentment I had in me. I just had to get it out. That was all there was to it. And Al-Anon knew this. The members of Al-Anon knew this. And they let me talk. I did talk. But I had to get rid of all the stinking thinking. The dry drunk thinking that I had to get rid of all this before I could get anything good and clean inside me to understand this. But eventually it got through to me with the teachings of Al-Anon, with the members understanding, with the different ones that I could talk to. I eventually took step one and admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, but there was nothing at all I could do to help my husband. All the things I had done and trying to stop my husband from drinking were all wrong. The only thing I should have done was leave him alone. Leave him alone. Take my hands up all together. So I got contentment, happiness, self-confidence, all the good things in life. I could get up in the morning and I could go over the causeway in a bus and look at the Swan River and appreciate that. I really enjoy later times, but there are times when I slip back badly, very badly. And but I have the courage to go and say then that I'm sorry, admit when I'm wrong. I have the courage to admit when I'm wrong, which was a thing I would never ever do before. But these are all the things that Al-Anon helped you to do. They help you to understand that your husband doesn't do all these things to you because he wants to. He's sick. He does this to you because he can't help it. And when he says all the hurtful things to you, he really and truly is only saying, striking out at you because it's himself, it's really suffering. But some people have said life begins at 40. I've had this said to me quite a while ago, but to me, life began when I took that first step, admitted I was powerless over alcohol, and I accepted it. And also when I let go, and I let go. This is a slogan we have here, and it's my favourite slogan. Once I took my hand off the alcoholic, let the alcoholic go the way he wanted to, and live my life. I have no right to try and change my husband's life, but thank God now he's changing it for himself. But if you have a problem at all, the only answer to it is in Al-Anon. If you have a husband drinking problem in the family, and Alateen for the children. I must plug Alateen, send your children to Alateen. Thank you very much, ladies. Thank you.
Thank you, Netta. Now, all members of Al-Anon are not the wives of alcoholics. Alcoholics also have mothers. We would like to call on Ruth tonight, the mother of an alcoholic, for a few words. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. To Lois and Evelyn, welcome. And greetings to my fellow members of Al-Anon, my young friends of Alateen, and my good friends in AA. My name is Ruth, and I'm the mother of an alcoholic. Some little while ago, I read a quote in the Reader's Digest, and it said, "Life is the art of living with something you didn't expect would happen to you." And when I read it, I felt how much that meant about my life for the last 10 years. I am only just discovering, or this last few years, that there is some art in it. Because, as far as I was concerned, there wasn't very much art in the way I lived when I first discovered that my son was an alcoholic, which was some 10 years ago. Like Netta, I did all those things when he came home here from another state, a self-confessed alcoholic. I knew that alcoholism was an illness. I knew there was I didn't know if it was called a fellowship, but I knew there was a group of people who called themselves Alcoholics Anonymous. But just what type of illness this was and what Alcoholics Anonymous did and how they functioned, I had absolutely no idea, so my ignorance was colossal. And in this ignorance, I did all the wrong sorts of things. I shielded my son. I helped him in various ways, which made it very easy for him to continue drinking. Like Netta, I too used the old cliche, "You don't love us or you wouldn't do this thing." When none of these things had any effect, I turned to the other side of the coin and I started to nag. And I not only nagged, but I reminded him very constantly of all the things he had done which he should not have done, and all the things he hadn't done which I felt he should have done. It still didn't make any difference. He still went on his merry way, and I was getting sicker, physically and mentally. So much so that on two occasions, within a matter of 2 to 3 years, I was in hospital. To be told by a specialist that there was nothing organically wrong with me, that it seemed to be emotional, and did I have a problem in my life, which I didn't confide to the specialist. I hadn't recognised it as a problem. I was still going on trying to cure this boy of the sickness of alcoholism. And then I heard about Al-Anon. And 9 years ago this April, Alice spoke of it being 18 years, on 9 years ago this April, There was a notice in the paper to say that there would be an anniversary meeting of this fellowship of people who were relatives and friends of alcoholics, and I decided to go to that meeting. I recruited my daughter to come with me, and we went along to this place. It was a little bit dark outside, and there was one lady standing outside. And I'm so grateful that after many years tonight, I met her here again. And she came up to me, or to us, and she said, "Are you looking for something?" And I said, "Yes, we're looking for an Al-Anon meeting." So she invited me in. Well, time doesn't permit me to dwell too much on this, but from that meeting, I started to go to the Al-Anon meetings once a week. I still hadn't admitted this first step. I still went along full of disappointment, frustration that my efforts hadn't had any effect on my son, and still hoping desperately that because I went to these sort of meetings, he would stop drinking. But, of course, he didn't. And I just wondered what on earth I was coming to these meetings for. And my attitude of self-pity must have been very evident, because in a very kind and gentle and knowledgeable way, one member said to me one day after the meeting over a cup of tea, I think she sensed that I had a hurdle that I couldn't get over. And she said, "Ruth, do you think self-pity could be the block that's stopping you?" And I wasn't very happy at this. I thought, me, self-pity, after all I've done for him. Oh, brother. But somewhere along the line, the higher power that I've learned to acknowledge in this fellowship must have been guiding me, because I went home in tears, admittedly, and I looked at those steps again, and I began to pick up the literature which had been given to me, and I think for the first time, it really began to make an impact on me. I got as far as the fourth step, and I didn't like it at all, because I didn't like what I saw. But thank God, I did have the courage to have a look at myself. And what I saw wasn't nice. Over a period of time, when I sorted all these steps out, and that one in particular, I began to see what I had been doing to the alcoholic. I had taken away the responsibilities that were his to run his own life. I had organised it. I had made it easy for him to go on drinking, thereby retarding any ideas he might have had of changing. And in short, I feel I was gradually taking away his dignity as a man. And for a man to assume responsibilities, he has dignity. But when a man has his dignity taken away from him, how could I expect him to assume responsibility? And this was something that became very evident to me. And keeping on with my meetings at Al-Anon, reading the literature, talking to the girls, hearing of their experiences, picking out the little bits that they had used to combat or to look after a problem similar to one I might have had, I picked out the bits that I thought would apply to my situation, and I tried them out. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't. I was shortly after I'd been in several months, I was taken to an AA meeting. And I will always be deeply grateful to the Al-Anon member and her husband who took me to this meeting, because it was at an AA meeting that I really learnt what my son suffered as an alcoholic. I listened to the experiences of these men and women who were conquering this disease and who had a measure of serenity, of success in life, were happy people living a very rewarding life, and my son as yet had not got to this stage. But it gave me such a wonderful hope, and it instilled in me a faith in these steps and in this program that after 9 years I still haven't lost, because my son will eventually come to this program. It's too big a thing for him to miss out on. There are too many people who've benefited by it. I have benefited by the steps. I've benefited by the slogans. And I know the time must come when it will reach out to him. And at that meeting, I think I learned for the first time in my life, and I'm not young, I'll bet I'm the oldest member in Al-Anon as far as years go. Not membership, but in age. And I learnt for the first time the true meaning of compassion. My definition to me of compassion is love with understanding. I loved my son, yes, but mother love can be very blind. And I was just loving him because he was my son. And yet there was no understanding of his problem. But after that AA meeting, I did have some understanding. And I've continued in Al-Anon, looking for all the good things in him. He is a sick man. As Netta said, as she learned too, they are sick and they don't do these things to hurt us because they want to. It seems that the closer we are to these people, the more they hurt us. And this is the emotional tie. This is where I feel my tie as a mother is quite different to that of a wife or a husband. Because a mother wants to rush in and do this and do that. And this is where I feel that in the past my love could have been very selfish because I wanted this for myself. I wanted my son to be what I thought he ought to be and what I know he can be. But I must accord him the privilege of making up his own mind about his own life, what he wants to do with it. And until he does, I'll just have to go on living. And in Al-Anon, I think I've learnt that living is the art of living with something that I didn't expect to happen to me. Without those steps, I couldn't have made it. Number five is one I can use. If I have said these days anything that I feel I might have gone a little too far within my son or perhaps said something that could have hurt him, although he's never said so, I can so very easily tell him I'm sorry. And this he accepts. And to Bill and Bob, who built these steps for us to climb, and to Lois and her early members who adopted them for us, I shall be ever grateful that you gave them to us, because without the steps and without the slogans and the serenity prayer, I wouldn't have the measure of serenity I have today, and I wouldn't have all the good friends I've got in all these fellowships. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruth. There's another member of the family that's affected by this disease, indirectly, I mean apart from the alcoholic himself or herself, that is the children of the alcoholics. And tonight we have Fiona from our team, I'd like to say a few words.
My name is Fiona, and I'm a member of the Face the Dawn Alateen group. And I'd like to say that since joining Alateen, and since Mama has joined Al-Anon, the situation in our family has improved tremendously. Whereas before, we used to resent my father's drinking and feel that he didn't really care about us. Now we've learned to accept them and realise that there's nothing that we can do that will help them, but that we can help ourselves a lot. And in Alateen, the members all find that they're not the only one with the problem, and this helps an awful lot because it helps to stop you from pitying yourself so much when you realise that there's so many other people in the same boat. I think also since myself and my sister have joined Alateen, it's helped my father a lot too because we're not so unthinking towards him and we try to understand him a lot better and don't criticise him so much. I really think that for anyone who has a drinking problem in their home at all, any teenager, that Alateen is a marvellous fellowship, and I think anyone who has this kind of a problem should join because it really gives you a marvellous help in living in your home and getting on well in life despite any problems. Our group, which meets in Victoria Park Retreat House every Friday night at 7:30, is only small at the moment. We only began in October and we only have four members as yet. We would very much like to have some more members to liven up the group and give us more help, as well as helping any other people who might want to join. So if anyone is interested, please do come along. Thank you.
heard from all the family that are affected by this drink. And we now have a better call on one of the AA members, Bill C.
Mr. Chairman, our distinguished guests from America, ladies and gentlemen, I was a member of a panel who met some 3 or 4 weeks ago to decide who the speakers might be tonight if they turned up, and I wasn't one of them. So, here I am, and I don't know what I'm going to say. But before getting on, a thought just struck me as I was sitting there that I sort of folded my hands, and I'd like to tell Lois and Evelyn that we've got a brewery here that makes grog called Swan Lager, and this is not Swan Lager. But I'd like a few shares in that brewery. Well, being an alcoholic and a member of the city group of AA, I'm still a little bit emotional and unstable, which is part of my nature. And I was thinking while Ruth was speaking there, because I see a very good friend of ours, an ally of ours, a doctor and a psychiatrist, who's been good enough to come along this evening. And whilst Ruth was speaking, I thought to myself, I'd hate to be a psycho bloke trying to work out an alcoholic. What a hell of a job he'd have. First of all, he wouldn't get the truth, and if he did get it, he'd half get it, and he wouldn't know where he was. So how these fellows deal with us, I just don't know. But I was fortunate. I was advised and suggested that I come to or have a look at AA, IA doctor, and I only learnt the other day that there are quite a lot of doctors, I seem to be hammering the MOs tonight, that are on our side, and some who probably unwittingly don't know how we work. I went to my repat doctor, and he knows I'm in AA, and we got talking about this. He said, I've never had any success with my patients going to AA, and I said, why, do you have, many people that have got a drug problem? Oh, hell yes, he said, quite a few. He said, I said, well, how do you get them to AA? He said, I just tell them that they'd better go there. Well, I then told him the story of how my doctor got me there. I sat at his table at 10 o'clock one night while he picked up the phone and rang my sponsor, Clem, and said, I've got a fella here who's interested in AA. So I suggested to this doctor that he might like to do the same. I'm waiting to get a phone call. But I was very privileged this morning of being one of a group of about 8 or 10 people who set the alarm for 4 o'clock and went out to the Perth airport with Seth and his good wife and Bill and, as I said, about 8 or 10 others, and had the privilege and pleasure of meeting Lois, the wife of Bill, our co-founder, and of Evelyn. And whilst driving out there, I was thinking, how we, Alkies and probably Al-Anon members, can sort of be on our own and thinking of what's happening. And I pictured this plane coming along because somebody had told me sometime in knocking around AA that Bill and his wife Lois hoped to get to Australia one day. And I thought, how sad this is that here's Lois coming and Bill is not with her. And also, during my thinking, I remembered seeing this film, the first time that I'd seen Bill, other than photos, of the talk he gave on the 12 traditions. And for anybody who didn't get to that film that evening, they missed a jolly good show. That was really terrific. And then sitting down, we went into the little lounge and had a cup of coffee. And I thought, Bill had been there, it would have been nice, but however, his maker decided otherwise, and we're very lucky anyway that Lois is with us. She still looks as if she's got another 20 or 30 to go. But my thoughts wandered on as I was driving home, that some few years ago I said to my wife that when I retired, I was in the services, that when I retired we'd go to America because I'd like to meet Bill and Lois. Well, I retired from the Army 3 years ago and haven't moved. So I've missed out meeting Bill, but I've made a decision this time that, God willing, in 2 years' time, when I finish this job that I'm doing since I've retired, that I'll come to America, Lois, and meet you all. And as I said, I was on the panel to select speakers. I've had my little say. It is really a privilege and a pleasure to be here tonight to hear from Lois and Evelyn, and at the expense of interfering with their train of thought, I would like to request Lois to tell us just a little bit, although probably we've read it somewhere, I'd just like to hear it, you know, first hand, of just a couple of sentences or a couple of minutes of how Bill and Bob sort of talked and where you were and how they sort of started this thing going, if you wouldn't mind. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Bill. Well, Sam, Bill brought up the subject of Swan Lager. I can assure you that Lowe's interest is not in Swan Lager, but it's very much in the black swans. We endeavoured to take her around this afternoon to show her some black swans, but unfortunately my car broke down and she had to finish the trip in a taxi. But I hope she did manage to see some around here at Mungus Lake. Well, now comes the time of the evening, ladies and gentlemen, we've all waited for, and that is to hear from Lois herself.
Thank you all so very much. Bring tears to my eyes and my throat, you can hear them. And thank you, Sus, for your gracious introduction. It really is a tremendous privilege to be here with you. And as Bill C. and several others have mentioned, my Bill and I so often had hoped to come to the other side of the world, down under, to see how AA was performing over here and to meet you all. And one thing or another always prevented us. But I'm sure he's with us here tonight in spirit. And I thought I should carry on, but that would be what he would want me to do. So here Evelyn and I are tonight. You know, I never know whether I'm AA or Al-Anon. I've really been brought up with them both, and they're both so close to my heart. And I'll tell you a little bit about, I think, how I happened to realize that I, too, needed to live by the same principles as Bill did. Like so many wives, I went along at first trying to help Bill for his sake, going to some meetings that we had of what was then called the Oxford Group, to which the friend that came to Bill with this message took us. And I didn't think there was anything there that I needed, but I would do what I could by going with Bill to these meetings. And to go back a little bit further and tell you about our early life, when we were first engaged, I was so very proud of Bill because he never took a drop to drink. He'd go to the saloons with the boys and order ginger ale or 7-Up or something else. And I thought he was so strong-minded. But then the First World War came along and he joined the army. And he was stationed in a small cotton town in New Bedford, Massachusetts. And the society women in the town there used to invite the young officers of the post to their homes for a social time and to serve them cocktails. And so I always liked to tease Bill by saying he could resist the boys and the men in the bars, but he couldn't resist the women when they offered him a cocktail. But Bill never drank like ordinary mortals. He always got drunk. He was never a social drinker. One always ended up being 20 or however many. But like Ruth, I thought that, and also like Netta, I thought that living with me would be so inspiring and uplifting that he wouldn't need any artificial stimulant. But as the days went on and the years, he got worse and worse and worse. Until finally, I really had to make all decisions, take all responsibility, and earn all the income. Bill just stayed home and drank. But before that, he had tried, of course I tried to do everything I could, but for a number of years, he realized that this drinking habit, which he had thought at first he could stop any time he wanted to, that it had gotten beyond him and that he couldn't do anything about it himself. Because we tried together to do everything we could think of, and nothing worked. Until finally, and I'm sure you've read about it in the AA book, about how this friend came to him. And he came bright-eyed and clear-thinking. This drinking companion of his, who had never been in New York sober before. And Bill, of course, was very curious about it. And he asked him about what had happened to him. And he said, well, I got religion. Well, Bill kind of laughed up his sleeve a little bit at that, because he was quite an agnostic. He didn't believe in any religion at all. So he said, what brand? Being a familiar thought in his mind. And then this friend told him about it. And as you know, he went to the hospital and had this beautiful spiritual awakening. And then after that, he thought, he began to figure out a little bit about what had made him sober up. And he thought, if it can happen to me, it can happen to others. And he worked out a formula in his mind. And he translated or interpreted the principles that this Oxford group had into the 12 steps. And he often said he made them 12, not because they were a dozen or any spiritual significance in the figure 12, but because there'd be enough of them so that the drunks, as he called them always, couldn't slip out in between. He'd make them so tight and so close together that there wouldn't be any space in between for anybody to slip through. So, as I say, he worked out the 12 steps. But this was a little bit after what I think Bill wanted me to tell about when Bill and Bob met. Bill had been working with other alcoholics for several months, and he brought all his old drinking buddies and anybody he could find in the highways and byways. He brought them home, and we had the house full of drunks. My father's house we were living in, and it had 5 stories. It was a regular city house, and we had them in the basement and up on the top floor, in all stages of sobriety. Because Bill was going to sober up all the drunks in the world. But strangely enough, very few of these really got sober. We were really trying to do too much for them. We didn't have this philosophy of letting the person take his own responsibility. So the boys kept saying to Bill, "Well, why don't you get a job? Why do you keep this girl here working and looking after the drunks too? Why don't you get out and do something?" So he got a job, but it was in the stock market field. Really, there was going to be a big meeting in Akron of one of the companies that he was interested in, and he wanted to go out and see if he couldn't help the decision to the way he thought it should go at this big meeting that they were going to have. So he went out there, but he didn't have any luck at all, and he had $10 left in his pocket. And he was in a hotel, and it had a bulletin board up that told the various churches, the ministers, and where they were speaking on the next Sunday. So he looked at this list, and the bar was at one end of the lobby of the hotel, and this church directory was at the other, and he kind of walked back and forth, half thinking that maybe that his job that he came out there for had failed, and that maybe a drink might be the solution. But then he saw the church directory, and he remembered that working with these other alcoholics at home had kept him sober. And it suddenly came to him that he'd been really talking down to them, and what he needed right there and then was somebody to help him. And so he called the directory. Several of the names on the directory, I should say. And there was nobody that he got any response from, until finally he did get somebody. And the Reverend Tunks. Well, he picked out that name, Tunks, T-U-N-K-S, because he thought it was such a funny name. Bill was always interested in names. And he said, "I'll call Tunks." So he did, and the Reverend Tunks put him in touch with a woman, Henrietta Seidling, who had a husband who had a problem of her own. But she belonged to this group, the same group, the Oxford group, that Bill had belonged to. And when he called her, she said, "Well, I know just the person." Everybody else, when Bill had told what he wanted, had said, "Well, we'll see. I'll see you in church on Sunday," or some such thing. They didn't understand what Bill really wanted. And but Henrietta did. And She said, well, I think I know just the man for you to talk to. It's Dr. Bob Robert Smith. And she called Annie, his wife, and Annie said, oh, we'd love to come over, Henrietta, but it's Mother's Day, and Bob has brought home a potted plant, and he's just put it on the table, but unfortunately, he's fallen underneath the table, and we can't get over today. So Bill waited another day, and the next day, Bob came. And Henrietta gave them a little study to talk together in. They were there all afternoon. Bob had said, well, I can come over maybe for 15 minutes, but I've got to get back because I'm very busy. But they stayed all afternoon talking together. And that really was the beginning of AA. Although for me it was when Bill sobered up, but it's appropriate and right, I think, the beginning of AA should be when there were two that needed each other together. And Bob and Bill really had a tremendously close and warm companionship. And he stayed out there several more weeks and went and lived in Bob's home. And I went out on the bus for a visit. And Annie, Bob's wife, was really a terrific person. She was almost blind and not very well, and used to sit in the corner and smoke one cigarette after another. But everybody, both AA's and Al-Anon's families of all sorts, used to come to her and go into this dark corner and consult Annie about this and that and the other things. She was very, very wise and clear thinking. And from my own standpoint, after Bill got sober, of course, I was tremendously happy. Here this thing had happened that I'd been working for all my life. And it took me quite a long time before something happened that made me realize that I wasn't as happy as I should be. That I was resentful. That I was full of self-pity. I was resentful because Bill and I, when he was drinking, we only had each other. We had no children. We had very few friends. All our friends had dropped us, and we'd practically dropped our families because we were both of us ashamed to be with them. So we were together a tremendous amount. And after he got sober and we had the house full of drunks, I never saw him anymore. And I missed, very deeply, I missed the companionship. Although I was so grateful for the sobriety. Yet this drunken period did have its good features too, because we were there together. And for me that was, of course, all important. So, one day Bill said, hurry up now, let's get ready and go to the meeting. This was one of the Oxford group meetings that we were going to. And I had a shoe in my hand, and I threw that shoe just as hard as I could and said, darn your old meetings. Well, it was that incident that woke me up. It didn't seem to surprise Bill, but it surprised me that I should lose my temper so violently over a simple remark. Over nothing. I began to see that there must be something wrong somewhere if I was reacting so. But it took me a long, long time to really weed out all the things, and I'm sure I haven't done it yet even, all the things that were ailing me at that time or since then. So, Annie had the same sort of an experience. She realized that she had to live the same way of life as her, as Bob. And a lot of the early members felt the same way. So the wives and husbands, there weren't many husbands then of alcoholics around, but the families used to gather together when the AAs, the first AA meetings were all open to everybody. And the wives talked and everybody talked. Mothers and children, everybody. Grandmothers, even. But by degrees, the alcoholics seemed to feel that they could really get down to business better if they were alone. So when they had these closed meetings, then we, the families, would meet together ourselves. And sometimes we just gossiped. Sometimes we played cards. Or eventually, we began to try to use the same 12 principles, 12 steps that AA was using. We tried to use them on ourselves. And for a long time, of course, there wasn't any literature. So, in order to start a group, for AAs to start another group, they had to go there. They had to talk with a person. Either a man would come to a hospital from a distant spot, and the boys would go to the hospital and talk with him, or we'd travel and go around. So Bill and I did a tremendous amount of traveling in those early days. And wherever we would go, I would talk to the wives and tell them that how I had found that I too needed to live by the 12 steps of Al-Anon. So there wasn't any organized, really, Al-Anon. But it seems to me that Al-Anon really started almost as early as AA, just as soon as there were a number of us that began to feel that we should follow in our husband's footsteps. And of course, that's what Al-Anon has been doing ever since. And it has been my job as Bill's wife to interpret the steps and then the traditions. And finally, we have at our Al-Anon conference in 1970, we adopted the 12 concepts of service, which were an adaptation of AA's 12 concepts of service. And I think they were just about in time, because Al-Anon service centers are now starting to spring up all over the world. And these concepts are a great help. And of course, Bill's latter life in AA really was trying to form a structure for AA, which Al-Anon is copying, that would hold it in unity as long as God should need it. Thank you.
Allow us. I'm sure the tape recording that was made then when you were speaking will be played many times out. We'll still learn a lot from it. I'd like now to call Evelyn. See if we can.
I don't know how I can
person speak after all these wonderful speakers. I think I heard my story over and over again with these girls that were up before. And I want to say that it was quite an honor to come with Lois on this trip. And, of course, I had to ask my husband if I could come. So he allowed me. And it has been wonderful so far. And, of course, all last night we were on a plane coming from South Africa. And between the long plane ride and the change of hours, we were pretty groggy all day. But my name is Evelyn. I'm a member of the Jackson Heights Al-Anon Family Group and a staff member of Al-Anon World Service Office. I can't relate everything that has happened. I would be here all night. But I will tell you that I was brought up in an alcoholic home. My grandfathers were both heavy drinkers, alcoholics as I know now. And my father died an alcoholic. We couldn't do anything for him. He said he was too old to change. I always thought that that my father's drinking never bothered me. I was afraid of my mother more than my father, because my father used to buy me everything and my mother took it away from me or chastised me. But I got married very young, and it was to get away from my father's drinking, so it must have bothered me. Little did I know that a few years later I was battling the same problem in my own home. Now, my husband drank for, I would say, 20 years. The last 10 were pretty bad, and he was a daily drinker. Now, he has given me permission to relate some of the things that happened while he was drinking, because he does not speak at open AA meetings. He does take a closed meeting. But he's a very shy person, and he talks just buddy to buddy. Well, I was a very shy person, too. And after 20 years of this drinking, I was really a pretty sad sack. I couldn't talk to my next-door neighbor. I really couldn't talk to anybody. We never went out anywhere, because if we were going anywhere, my husband came home drunk before we went, and if we invited anybody to the house, he was 2 hours late, and he was drunk. As I say, he was a daily drinker. And one incident that I would like to relate was that one night, well, I'd say about 3 o'clock in the morning. No, sorry, I'm ahead of myself. I had his supper on the stove. I always had it sitting there on a pot of boiling water. This was a regular thing. I don't know how he ever ate that food, but he did. I heard a noise coming down the driveway of the house, and my husband came in with 3 men and the taxi driver. It was a big joke. I was supposed to pay the taxi driver. But I hit the ceiling. And I think that one of the only times I ever lost my temper. I told him to get out and take all his friends with him. And he went. And they all trooped out, all laughing, all going up the driveway. About 2 hours later, he rolled back in, and he said to me, he says, Evelyn, he said, I will never bring my friends home again. I really wish he had meant it, but I knew he didn't. I think that's why I can't remember names today, because I'd meet John and Joe and Bill and Fred, and it'd go right through my ears, so I never remember anybody's name anymore. Well, that wasn't the end of the incident. A couple of nights later, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he came upstairs, and he shook me, and he says, Evelyn, he says, get up. He said, I have a friend downstairs.
I said, oh, I'm asleep. I never was asleep until he came in. But he says, oh, come on, down. It seems as though he had lost some of his prestige in the bar where he drank. They thought he was henpecked. So he brought the owner of the saloon home to prove he wasn't. So I got up and I made this man drink. I made him milk punches because he had to drink his whiskey and milk because he had ulcers. And for 3 hours I sat up and made this man drink. And my husband, of course. I met this man again in AA. I guess about 3 years later. And he came over to me and he said, Evelyn, he said, I will never forget the night, he said, you got up and made me milk punches. He said, I think you are a wonderful person. He didn't know that I hoped he'd choke on everyone. See, I was really sick. This was getting me. It was really getting to me. I used to do an awful lot of praying. Every time I passed the church, I would go in and pray, please, God, do something. Can't you do something? I never knew I could do something myself. But I think it must have got through. Because my brother-in-law is an alcoholic. And he went to a church meeting. They were taking a census or something of all the people in the parish. And he went there and he met a man that belonged to AA. And they got talking. At that time, my brother-in-law was on a, what you'd call a pledge. He was just waiting until the year was up so he could drink again. But I think he hadn't had a drink for about 3 months at that time. And they got talking about drinking, and this man asked him if he ever tried AA. And he said, I don't know what AA is. He said, well, come to the meeting. So my brother-in-law went. And he liked it, and he knew it was for him. So he never got to the end of that year. And we were having a pretty bad time in our house. And my brother-in-law knew it. So he came over to see how we were making out. And he said to my husband, he said, you are going to a meeting. Maybe I had an easier time of getting my husband to AA than many of you. So the next night he said, and don't have a drink. He said, you be sober. Well, a couple of nights later he came over to pick him up, take him to the meeting. Of course, telling an alcoholic not to be sober was a little crazy. Anyway, my husband was drunk, but he got dressed and he went with his brother. And this was the pattern for quite some time. 3 times a week, my brother-in-law would come take my husband to a meeting. He was always drunk, but he went. And one night I asked him if he was going with his brother. He says, of course I'm going, he said. If I didn't go with him, he wouldn't go, and he needs this. But the seeds were being planted. And my husband drank for 11 months before he stopped drinking. He went to AA for 11 months before he stopped drinking. And it was one New Year's Eve when we went to... my husband has a large family, and we always had a New Year's Eve party in one of the homes. And when you entered the house, you was handed a drink in both hands to start you off. And my brother-in-law said, give him a ginger ale. Well, you know, this was the wrong thing to do. He should have had more AA than that. Anyway, my husband says, give me a highball. And he had 2 highballs that New Year's Eve. And at 12 o'clock, when they came around with the champagne, he refused it. He hasn't had a drink since. That was in 1949. He has never said why he stopped drinking that night. He's never told, and as I say, he's never told anyone his story in an open meeting, so I don't know. We have never really discussed it. He did tell me that he must have been in a permanent blackout for many years. Now, all this happened before there was Al-Anon. 2 years before Laura started the clearinghouse, as we called Al-Anon World Service Office in those days. And it was 6 months later that I heard about it. I used to go to the AA meetings with them, with my brother-in-law and he. And we would talk to wives. I would meet the wives. And it was quite a relief to me to find that there was other people that had the same problem, that I wasn't the only one in this world. But as I said, I was shy, so I didn't talk very much, but I got a lot out of these meetings. It was the only social life we had for a long time. We used to go to one another's homes, and I would sit in the background, and everybody would talk, and I would listen. It was at an AA meeting where I heard about Al-Anon. The wife of one of the alcoholics asked me if I'd come to the meeting. So I said, Al-Anon, what's that? And she said, well, come and listen. So I asked my husband if he had heard about Al-Anon, and he said, yes, he worked nights once in a while. So he had been to what we call the Queen's Night Workers. They had the AA meetings in the afternoon for the night workers. And it seemed as though one of these ladies had been talking to the Queen's Night Workers about Al-Anon. And he said to me, he said, it may be good for you. So I was afraid to go alone, so I asked him to come with me to the Al-Anon meeting. And it so happened that there was a husband and wife talking that night about how they had adjusted their life with AA and what little Al-Anon she had had. And they gave their, you know, how they had gotten together and worked the AA program themselves. So my husband was allowed in. So it was an open meeting that night. Because most of our Al-Anon meetings are more or less, we don't exactly call them closed, but they're all Al-Anons there. But I went home and my husband said, well, what do you think? I said, Al-Anon, it'll be all right for people that have all those faults. What faults have I got? I never drank. I had no faults at all. So, but I kept going to the meetings. I went every week to the Al-Anon meetings. Never opening my mouth. There was a woman that started to go there a few months after I did, and she asked all the questions that I wanted to ask, so I got my answers. I read over the 12 steps. I didn't get past the first one because I could have a drink or two drinks, and I didn't have to drink myself under the table. And I knew my life was unmanageable before I ever read that step. And it wasn't until Lois, at the first anniversary of this family group that I went to, the Jackson Heights family group, which I'm still a member, Lois gave her interpretation of the 12 steps. This was before they had it as how one AA wife lives the 12 steps. This was the interpretation that she gave. And there was Lois and Ann Bingham, who started the clearinghouse with Lois, and Wally, the father of an alcoholic. They were at our first anniversary. And that's the first time I ever met Lois. I began to realize that I could work these steps myself. We had very little literature, and the girls that were running the group, I'll say running the group, used to read chapters out of Father Fowle's golden books, and you'd see one girl, she'd have about six books here, and here we would. And you know, when I first went to that Al-Anon meeting, we had about, I'd say 75 or 100 members. And when we started to work, when the clearinghouse started, and I haven't said this before, and it's just come to me. When we said that it was a self-improvement for ourselves, for us, to grow in this program, we dropped down to 25. So a lot of the women felt like I did, that they didn't have any fault. But it was also around this time that they wanted a treasurer. And as I couldn't say no or open my mouth yet, I was the treasurer. And they gave me, the treasury was $2.40. So they trusted me. And one night, they said that I had to get up, and it was a special meeting, a big meeting, somewhat like this. We had special speakers for that night, and the groups all used to join together for those. I was told that I had to get up and make an announcement and ask them to be generous in the collection. Well, I didn't sleep for a whole week before. And when I got up, I shook all over so my voice trembled. It was terrible for me. But I got over it. And I might have been talking ever since. It was also at that time they were asking for volunteers at the clearinghouse, Al-Anon World Service office. And as I was still very shy, I could not talk to people. I thought, well, what can I do in an office? I'd never worked in an office. If I start doing something or say something, they'll laugh at me. This is the way I felt. But the woman who invited me to the Al-Anon in the beginning kept pushing me and pushing me, and I kept saying, no, no, I wouldn't. I was saying no, no then. So I was talking. So she got on the bright idea of sending me down to the clearinghouse on the one day they were open for a book. She said, we need this book. So I went down there. I took the subway and I went downtown New York. I was always fearful of the subway. And I walked around where the 24th Street Clubhouse was, the first AA clubhouse in the world, and I couldn't find it. I didn't know that it was just a doorway in between two houses, and I think I had forgotten the number. So I was on my way back to the subway, very happy that I had found it. And I met a girl that went to our group, Jackson Heights. And she says, what are you doing down here, Evelyn? A long way from home. I said, well, I came down to buy a book for Herman. And I said, I can't find the place. She says, oh, I know where it is. I'll take you. So she did. And I was in. I've been there ever since. But in the beginning, we had that one day a week that we used to go down, open the mail. It was in a lounge part of the clubhouse where we did the work. And we had a small room on the side where every night we'd pack everything in that we had. Every Tuesday morning we would have to bring everything out. And everybody met there. And we did the few pieces of literature. I think we had three pieces. We had purposes and suggestions that Lois had done in the beginning. And we had a small pamphlet, Non-Alcoholics, God Bless Them, that came from California. And I think we had Marty Mann's pageant. And we had a Toronto booklet called the Al-Anon Family Groups. And this is what we had. And I was elected to wrap these packages. I couldn't do anything else. And Lois used to bring a brown paper bags from home. We used to slit them up to wrap the packages in, and she used to bring string. She was a good saver, you know. She pulled the saver all the time. And I used to go home from that Tuesday and think, oh, gee, a whole week before I can go back there again. Because it was bringing me out of myself. It was giving me confidence in myself. To be able to come down, of course, Lois was always there, and Anne, and to meet all the other volunteers, it was a wonderful opening for me. And I used to do the labels in longhand on the packages. So I got up enough courage to take a typing course in the local high school, which is a miracle in itself for me. And I passed. I could take a typewriter apart and put it together again and all this stuff. Oh, and what an opening that was for me. How thankful that I was. How happy. And Bill brought me down a small portable typewriter, which I found out later was Lois's.